Welcome back to the Activation Phase. This is Tim. I'm here with JP as always. Hello, JP.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be back.
All right. So this is the, I'm not sure if we said it wrong the last time. We were quite unsure, the both of us, like 5 minutes ago. But this is the second to last episode for the Vikings, for the Age of Vikings, that is. And this one is going to be the Scots. And I personally have a love-hate relationship with these guys. How about you, JP?
I actually quite like them. But yeah.
No hate.
No hate. Just admiration.
Okay. Yeah, I see. So do you want to go? Is there anything of import about their history that is not like well known, like the Celts or whatever?
Yeah, they have no history of any type of importance whatsoever.
That's exactly what I thought. Perfect. All right.
Good. We cover that.
please don't leak our addresses. It's Scottish people. We love you. Please. Okay.
I feel like Scottish people are a little bit less sensitive than other people we may have covered. All right, let's get into the equipment options, which are actually pretty all over the place, and some of them are very well supported and some of them are not supported at all by the battle board. Spoiler alert. So the warlord can either be on foot or mounted on a horse. Same thing with the Hearthguard. The warriors have no equipment options, and that's the only thing they can do. And then finally, the levies can either have bows or javelins. So relatively few options, but I think we'll kind of, as we go along, it'll be pretty clear which ones we prefer and which ones get supported by the board. I think there it's pretty clear in what you actually need to take and where the board needs to go. Do you want to give us a quick overview of what people can expect with the Scots and what kind of play style they have?
Right. Yeah. I think they are probably. So I think they have two possible play styles. They're probably one of the best defensive factions that is just insanely tanky if they don't move around and just use all their dice for their abilities. I mean, basically every faction is better when they don't have to use their dice to do just basic activations. But I think the Scots, they can be incredibly tanky. But also, there has been the list with the big Hearthguard stacks. That is actually quite terrifying in like an offensive playstyle as well, because these guys, they have some special tricks which usually makes it so that they're, even if they're attacking, they're quite survivable. And so these guys are basically just put their foot to the ground, don't move, or have like one big charge a turn where they usually come out unscathed. I think that's basically what the Scots try to do.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. It's also fair to say that even when they're defending, they're pretty attacky. Because I think you said even when they're attack, basically their attack and defense dice are not exclusive with this board. I think generally they have a pretty good all-round kind of board with. They have some abilities for shooting, they have some abilities for gaining attack dice, defense dice, maybe not so much on the movements, but overall it's a pretty strong board. I don't think it's easy to lose big with the Scots. You can always kind of like hold in there and then it's not something you're going to normally just wipe a Scottish warband, because it's really difficult to actually remove the models from them.
I think they can only lose big if there's like an objective in play that gives a ton of points, where the Scots maybe struggle to reach that or play the more of the objective based mobile play style. I think it might be pretty easy to not interact with the Scots at all in a game and outscore them. I feel like that's just straight up to begin with, I think that's a big weakness they have. But that might be my perspective. What's yours on that?
Yeah, I think that's the case. Also, generally, if you're playing just Age of Vikings, you're good to go. I think if you mix it up a little bit with the old friend enemies playing with the Huns against them, they don't really have an effective response there. So I think they're really strong in melee, both in offensive and defensive capabilities, but they're relatively weak if you're actually shooting them a lot. So probably if you're playing step people against them, probably if you're playing the mounted Welsh, they can they're just like a little bit too slow, and they don't have enough shooting defense to be really really effective. But everyone else, yeah, you're going to be doing, it's going to be an uphill battle if you're fighting the Scots. So having said that, should we get to the battle board?
Yeah, right. You want to start us off with the basic abilities?
Yes, I would definitely like to start us off. So to begin, they're using the, I think they're called the Scottish dice, but I'm not sure. Basically, the same ones as the Irish, the dice with the yellow symbols. Generally, they're also used by the Picts. And I think it's fair to say that the Pict models and the Scottish models are very interchangeable. I think even Footsore basically has exactly the same models for both ranges, probably with slightly different shields if you want to do it. But I think we'll get to that in the later end of the episode, as per usual. So, basic abilities. Absolutely no difference whatsoever.
It looks pretty normal. All right.
It is pretty normal. So, all right, nice and easy. Let's go to the advanced abilities.
I'll go straight into Stand Together. It's an activation ability that takes a common to activate, and it's only for Hearthguard and Warriors. Activate a unit to charge. During the ensuing melee, your unit counts as being the defender and its enemy as the attacker. So this one's quite interesting because a ton of things come with this. So when you charge and you're the defender, you definitely don't ever want to do that into like anything that gets a charge bonus, like javelins, for example, because then suddenly they get their bonus as if they had charged. And this is, you can close ranks, of course, because you're the defender, and so that's the first decision you need to make. And then your opponent needs to play the first ability, and you get to do the second one. So I think this can slightly mess with an opponent when you can charge them, and actually, like, they don't quite know if you're going to close ranks or if you're going to be indestructible again. And this also, it's just weird, because when you charge into like a ruin, you take away the defender's. Then I guess the opponent is the attacker, so you take away their bonuses from armor, which is quite interesting because it's tough to kick a unit out of a ruin or out of solid ground and solid cover. And so this is quite interesting. And if you can get all your guys in there, you even get the bonus because you count as the defender. So I think this is interesting. I feel like it's a combo piece with other abilities on here. That there's one that says you need to have closed ranks, for example. I feel like this is, other than these edge cases where you charge into like cover and you take away their bonus, or you want to play the combo with the ability that has closed ranks, I feel like this is rarely played, actually. What do you think, JP?
I think, except for that, I think it's more of a combo combo thing later on as well. So in of itself, it's interesting, but it doesn't make a ton of sense. And I think it's also one of the kind of like a one of a kind ability in Saga as well. So in that aspect, it's interesting, I guess. But makes more sense. So let's move on to the next ones, actually. And I think things will fall into place slowly. So the next one is using a common, so the snake. It's a diversionary volley. This is an activation. So activate a unit to shoot. Shooting attack, your unit gets two bonus attack dice, and the enemy may not gain any defense dice. This is a fan favorite for the one unit of levy which you're going to be taking with bows. It's just really solid. Like, you activate a unit of levy with a common, freeing up your uncommons for the abilities on this battle board. and it's just solid. Like you go from 6 to 8 dice, and then yeah, basically you can't get any people can't use their combat bonus or anything like that on it. So mounted Hearthguard become incredibly vulnerable yes. if they're anywhere close to your levy unit.
I feel like this is such a threat, this ability, that it can sometimes just be worth it to move your levy up and then shoot with them and take the fatigue after the shot, because if you get the right target, anything that's armor 3 or 4, like Hearthguard on armor 4 and Warriors on armor 3, for example, that's or the Warlords, just yeah, this is just 8 attack dice is just good, and you can also stack you can easily stack the combat bonus on top of this, and your opponent, they are not allowed to gain defense dice, and so I feel like this is even better than it seems.
It's I think in the end it's just a way of controlling the board as well. You put your levy down, you have this on it, like you don't need to keep an extra dice to shoot them as well, so it's incredibly efficient and it's really good board control. And if you are stupid enough to get close to them, then it's going to be a bad time for you.
Just one thing, I feel like this ability is kind of out of character for the board, because the rest is, as you said, is very melee focused, and so this is not every Scott player even has a unit of levy with bows, and so they can't play this. And I feel like if it's this ability alone might justify bringing a unit of levy warriors and placing them like somewhat aggressively on the board to make sure you have some space for your units. But I'm sure many people disagree on that.
No, I agree with you 100%. Also, since you're not super fast yourself, this is a really good way of making people kind of have to come to you. And then also make mm-hmm. things more difficult, for example, with your mounted Welsh or even your step people. Like it shuts down a large chunk of the board, and it forces them to actually engage or make some bad decisions or suboptimal decisions, just to be able to either just not be able to shoot you as much, which is great because you don't have that much shooting defense, or to put themselves in some not great or suboptimal position. So I'm not sure why I would ever not take Levy Bowman with this board, just purely based on this ability alone.
Yeah. All right, next up is Beyond the Wall. That's the first melee ability on here. It can take a uncommon or a rare. If you have more defense dice than attack dice, a player won +1 bonus to your defense rolls. If you used a rare, you may also reroll all 1s and 2s you score on your attack rolls. So this might seem very strange, and it is, but it works really well as a combo piece with the other abilities that kind of take your attack dice away and give you a defense dice. And it's just a way of increasing the value of the dice that you have, because with this board, frankly, you can get a ton of dice. Like, it's so easy to end up with a melee where you're allowed to roll like 50 dice, like 30 attack and like 20 defense in total, whatever. That's not challenging at all with this board. And so adding value to those dice and making them even more important or even stronger can be important and can be impactful. But of course, seeing as you already have a million defense dice through abilities, or you can get a million defense dice through abilities if that's what you want to do, I feel like the +1 bonus to your defense rolls sometimes just doesn't matter, because if you have close ranks, or even if you haven't close ranks and you still have like 20 defense dice, it's like you don't really need to bonus to kind of get out on top on that melee. So what do you think about this ability?
Yeah, I think the way that we tackle the boards, this one doesn't make a ton of sense, because normally you're never going to have, unless you're playing like 7 dice on combat bonus and you've closed ranks, you're generally not this is the first thing you're going to play. So I think let's move on and let's cover all of the abilities, and then we can probably talk about the combos. But this board is really a combo board to really get going. I get it's a similar type of vibe to the maybe the pagan Rus in terms of in Age of Vikings, just having a number of which you need to chain up in the correct the correct sequence to get the optimal result. So let's maybe just move on to the other ones, and then it will all make sense once we reach the end. All right, so the next one is called Tireless. This is using either a common or an uncommon. Again, a melee ability. So this is for a unit which has closed ranks. So again, this could be a kind of like a use case for Stand Together. But once the whole melee has been resolved, you may remove a fatigue from your unit. Does this happen after you disengage and then you get the extra fatigue melee?
Yeah.
All right, excellent. So that sounds good.
Yeah, I think they even tried to word it that way because they even say once the whole melee has been resolved, and I think step 7 is getting a fatigue of the melee. And I think they tried to word it that way that it's clear, but I feel like you're not the first person to struggle with that wording. And so, yes, absolutely. You get the fatigue and then you basically remove it again if you didn't have one.
Awesome. So thumbs up from me. I think I've played the Scots a few times with using the picked models that I have, and I think this one came up pretty often, especially with your Hearthguard. So you don't actually need to take a banner or anything like that. You can just play Tireless and then still get the attacks and enjoy basically fatigue-free charges. I guess there's also an edge case as well if you really want to double charge some people and not be completely exhausted at the end with Stand Together as well. If you really want to double move, play some people into terrain, charge them, play Stand Together, and then Tireless. But that seems probably the least optimal way of playing this. But overall, very good utility piece and keeping your aggressive Hearthguard up and running for longer.
Yeah, I feel like this. This feels like a stop sign to your opponent's charge, plethora of charges, I guess, because I think this is good on the Warlord to keep him around or to keep them around, and this is good on your as you said, on your Hearthguard. The whole thing about closing ranks probably deserves a topic, like an episode of its own. But I feel like there's many, many cases where you don't actually want to close ranks because you would come out on top. But if you already are closing ranks, then it's good to play this. And I feel like it's not worth it if you would usually come out on top if this in this melee, like you have more attack dice, your guys are warriors, your opponent has Hearthguard, all these things. Then it's probably not worth it to close ranks just to play this ability. But it's super dependent on what's going on. If you need your ability to your unit to have one less fatigue, whatever. This is a tool in a toolbox, and I feel like it's if used correctly, it's a good tool. It's just not as widely spread useful as other tools that we will look at in a few seconds here. And one of those is Long Spears. It's a melee ability that takes a common. It's infantry without ranged weapons. Discard up to half your attack dice. That makes sense with Beyond the Wall now. And gain one defense die for each attack die you discard. So, I mean, I feel like the most seen case is either 12 warriors or like 6 to 8 Hearthguard. And let's say 6 Hearthguard, so that would be 12 attacks. You discard half of your attack dice and you end up gaining 6 defense dice. This makes you quite survivable. It's like, it's better than closing ranks. Closing ranks is free, that's the case. But this is also just one piece of the puzzle. So let's keep on going, JP.
Yeah. Also, we haven't quite reached the optimal thing for Beyond the Wall yet, because if you discard half your attack dice,
yeah, you're right.
You're not quite there yet. I have more defense. hold your horses, which is kind of what we're what we meant with that you have to play abilities in a specific sequence. So yeah, the next one is called Reach. This is a two dice ability, so it's for a common plus an uncommon. It's an activation. So activate all your infantry units without ranged weapons to shoot. When resolving these shooting attacks, they count as being equipped with javelins. These activations do not generate fatigue. So this is a little bit of a solution as well to being a relatively slow warband, but it does mean that you can just kind of reach out and, as the name suggests, I guess, and kind of like hit some who are just outside range. So this could have been basically your opponent has charged you, has retreated short, and then this is kind of like the nightmare scenario once you attack the Scots off and do very little damage, and then they do this to you basically, because it's pretty brutal. Especially, example, a Hearthguard unit is shooting you back. Also, it's it's not like with the Jomsvikings board, which we covered previously, where they count as having javelins for the entire turn, so they become vulnerable and you can countercharge them. And it's them, but this is basically it only counts as them having javelins for this activation. Yes. So they go back to their normative affairs after this activation, so they only get the positive side, and on top of that it doesn't generate fatigue, so even nicer, I guess.
It's a quite valuable ability. I feel like this is super dependent. If you have a matchup where it's important, this is the workhorse of this, of the battle board. And there's other matchups where this is like it because it's two dice. And if your opponent is a melee faction as well, like putting two dice on your melee abilities will always be better, or usually be better. And so if you're having trouble catching your enemy and your opponent is on, has their has models on horses, or I guess units on horses, things that you can't quite reach, this one definitely helps you out a lot.
Yeah, I think that maybe the interesting thing here as well is just being able to get those units within within range. Like normally you're not going to get all your infantry units to be able to actually shoot something useful. Maybe just one or two, but then it'll be like some juicy targets. Also, one thing to note is that this does, while this particular activation doesn't generate fatigue itself, if you follow it up with a activation, I guess that does give you a fatigue because it does count as an activation. Yeah. Yeah. So the way I've used this mostly is that instead of, it's kind of to compensate. So you don't want to do like a double move or something like that, or a move and a charge, because then you'll end up with fatigue and it's not great. Like you can do this instead and basically have that extra M shooting range, mm-hmm. and then a little bit of damage and then not be fatigued. And then just wait the next turn, or have instead of having to activate a bunch of units to charge and lose those dice, you could just put them on your defensive abilities. So it's a pretty valuable ability, and it gives you like that little bit of extra defensive power and shooting power, and just makes it. Yeah, basically, as the opponent to the Scottish, you always have to figure out, like, what are they going to do? What if they pop, reach, and they start shooting me all over the place? Like, yeah, you just have to kind of nudge them back a little of the range. Because otherwise you can, yeah, if you're playing step peoples or like that, something like that, it's going to be a bad time if eight Hearthguard throws some javelins at your armor three guys.
And that's the thing, it's quite easy to get Hearthguard and like a Warlord into range to throw like a meaningful amount of javelins. It's just, if this battle board had a movement ability, this would be insanely good. And since it doesn't, I feel like I've seen Reach end up being a trap for the Scottish player, because they try to use like two or three, four activations to get their infantry into place, and then they throw reach and combat, like, and shooting is so, like, fluctuates so much if you really do damage. And so I feel like if you overcommit to reach and use two dice on the ability itself and like two or three dice slash activations to get your units there, it's probably not worth it. But if you're already in a good position, you just have to do one more move or whatever, then it's probably good. Right, next up is No Respite, and I think it's yours, right?
No, I did reach.
That's right, No Respite is mine. All right. Next up is No Respite. It's Oda's reaction, and it takes a rare. Roll three of your available saga dice and place them on your battle board on abilities without any active dice. I feel like that's old wording. It's value. You put a rare here, and you use your, in your turn, you use your great abilities. Like the next one we're going into in a second. I think that's basically the bread and butter. It's like the cheap, easy one you want to do every turn, and you can do that in your turn, and then in their turn you do Oda's reaction, and you put another dice on there and do it again. It's three saga dice for the price of one rare is something that, like, I feel like in total, like, maybe five battle boards out of the 68 or whatever we have now can do. And so if you have a rare, this is usually where it goes, because it's just insane value.
Why wouldn't you put it here? Basically, it's like an out of turn activation pool, better activation pool, and then being able to, especially with the new FAQ stuff, reactivate a number of abilities that you've played in your turn. So why wouldn't you do this?
Yeah, it's really good.
I think it actually got better as well with the update, so it was already pretty good to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right. The next one is very versatile because you can place all three dice facings on it. It's called Hold at Bay. This is a melee or a shooting reaction ability. Gain three defense dice. Nice and simple. If you use a rare, reroll it and place it on your battle board. So basically you get to just do more, which is even better. So I'm not sure this is the first place I would put the moose on, but it's if you pull ones, why not? But yeah, nice and simple. It's also one way of gaining the extra defense dice for Beyond the Wall. Spoiler alert. Who doesn't like extra defense dice? Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
So why would you use combat bonus if you can do this? But anyway, let's move on.
Really good value. And I think, yeah, the rare here is also, if you have two rares, then this might be the spot for a second one. It's good one. All right, next one. And this is something that I have to say. I know it's out of character, but the counterattack is the next one, and it takes two uncommons, and it looks exactly, because it also the two of the same symbol, it's also counter something. It looks exactly like Counterspell from Magic the Gathering. Anyway, let's go. I'll cut that out because everybody hates Magic the Gathering. I won't cut that out. All right, it's Counterattack. It takes two uncommons. It's a melee ability for Hearthguard and Warriors only. Gain two attack dice for each defense die you have. And that's like the biggest piece to the whole puzzle. Once you gave yourself all those defense dice with Hold at Bay, with Long Spears, they transform, you keep them, and they basically spawn a bunch of attack dice, which make your attacks just incredibly powerful and devastating. And this is a two die ability, but it is probably one of the best two die abilities in like the melee world of Saga. So it's a really, really good one.
Yeah, this is insane. It also makes it, yeah, so now it makes sense, all the other abilities. Also, it makes sense why they gave you Diversionary Volley with a common. So, because otherwise you would never be able to activate Harry would never choose to activate a levy unit with an uncommon ever.
Yeah.
So I think that's they probably changed diversionary volley after some playtesting. But yes, this is nice. This is awesome. And I think the final ability probably makes also a little bit more sense. So this is a two dice ability. This is Wall of Spears using a common plus a boost, a rare. This is again a melee ability for Hearthguard and Warriors only. Roll a dice for each figure in your unit. Gain one attack dice and one defense dice for each result, which is lower than your unit's armor. So I guess it makes more sense with Hearthguard, of course, because they're armor 5, so it's easier to get. But I must admit, I'm not sure I've actually played this one very often.
I think it's very expensive for while being restrictive in your army building. Because you kind of want to have big units and big units of warriors and big units of Hearthguard. Like, I've obviously, and that's a build with Macbeth, the legend, and I know we usually don't talk about them, and we won't here, but he kind of gives you a fixed amount of dice, so it doesn't matter what units you bring. And so the 12 stack of Hearthguard, they love this ability. But other than that, I feel like it's other abilities with basically three dice, because I usually count a rare as being like kind of like two dice. On boards that have the activation pool, that's just really expensive, and there's usually better places to put it.
And you have 8 Hearthguard. You might get one or two sixes, but generally you're going to roll most of them. I guess like 4 or 5 you'll roll at least under the armor, which means you get between 4 and 5. Attack plus defense dice, so that's pretty reasonable. But it's it's a common plus rare. I think no respite is probably the better place to put it, and you're just guaranteed to get dice if you do that. So I think it's a little bit of a casino one, potentially incredibly good, but it can also just fall flat on its face if you roll exceptionally high on this. So I think it's a little bit, I think there's some better places where you can put your dice and then you know exactly what you're getting back from this instead of putting them down here. So it's a little bit, it's kind of like if you're feeling exceptionally lucky you can play it, but there's better places where you can put it down and just be guaranteed return of dice.
Well, one important thing here, right? It's you even have to be lower. So for Hearthguard you have to roll 1, 2, 4.
Oh yeah. You have to do 4 or less instead. Yeah. You're right.
So that's rough. And if you can definitely use your opponent's armor to get your armor to 6, but then you're probably winning the fight anyway. And you surviving is also usually really not the problem for the Scots. So if they already have fatigue, you should probably use it to reduce their armor. And so.
Six extra defense dice if your armor 6 anyway, it's like meh, okay.
Exactly.
One thing, if you're super flush with dice, it does mean that you can actually be pretty survivable for like 2 combats basically. I think we need to count up all the dice that you're going to use for the combo soon, but if you roll exceptionally well and if everything goes your way you can probably survive, do like 2 good combats, because I think the Scots are kind of, you normally do like 1 combat really well and then the rest, you kind of have to hope for the best. This way, you could have like a second combat as well, which goes your way. But then unless you're playing it with the Hearthguard or for some reason people decide to charge you with like when they have lots of fatigue, so you can raise your armor, it doesn't make a ton of sense. So I think this one's going to have limited play. I'm interested to hear if people have found workarounds for it, but generally I think this is probably one of the least played abilities on the board.
I would agree. All right, let's go straight into how to do the combo right.
Yeah, let's do that. Grab your calculators and let's figure out how we can maximize maximize your defense and attack dice. All right, take it away, Tim.
Right. So I think as we can have the perfect scenario, which is 8 Hearthguard, or we could have the more realistic scenario of like 12 Warriors. What do you want to do, JP?
Let's go the perfect scenario first, and then we can then we can tone down people's expectations. But let's get them hyped up first.
As always. All right. So we start with the, I guess 8 Hearthguard even is overkill maybe a bit, but we'll see. All right. So you start with the 8 Hearthguard and you start combat with a measly 16 attack dice. Those are rookie numbers. Get those numbers up. And then you play long spears and you discard half your attack dice. So you go down to 8 attacks and you get one defense die for each attack die discarded. So you are on 8 defense dice, 8 attack dice. Pretty equal right now. Then you have the optional thing, and of course this is the perfect scenario, so we're doing the optional thing. You play hold at bay, so you gain 3 more defense dice. So you're at 11 defense dice and you are at 8 attack dice still. And then the last thing you do is you play a combat bonus for 1 defense die. So you're at 8 attack dice and 12 defense dice. And then to really show your opponent who's boss in this fight, you play counterattack, which will give you 2 attack dice for every defense die you have right now. So you are on 8 attack and 12 defense, so 12 defense will give you an additional 24 attack. So you will end up with the dream scenario of 32 attack dice and 12 defense dice. And you will kill whatever is in front of you, usually, and you will usually not take a single hit. This whole combo takes the small cost of 5 saga dice, not including the charge, of course. And is of course the optimal case, and I mean it's quite clear. I think the smaller the unit is that you have, the lower the dice cap that you can reach is. And so if you have 12 warriors, the max you can have in total is it's just 24 attacks, and that's yeah, you can definitely reach that by spending 4 or 5 saga dice. Let's go through it one second here. That's from 12. You play long spears. You go down to 6. With 6 defense dice, 6 attack dice, you need 18. Yeah. So then you play hold at bay, and you go up to 9 defense dice and 6 defense dice. So you played 2 dice by now, and then counter attack will make your 9 defense dice into 18 more attack dice, and you will end up at 24 attack dice and 9 defense dice for your 12 stack of warriors with 4 saga dice paid. Do you have another great combo, JP? I think that's basically the one.
that's it. I don't think the other ones make a ton of sense. So that's kind of what people or the Scottish players kind of the dream scenario, and that's what they're working towards. So anything you can do to make sure that they don't reach that is good. But basically if they do that, you're going to delete the unit, which sucks. So that's, everything else is, I guess the entire point of the Scottish board is to line that up and then just delete a unit per turn, from like turn 2 onwards. That's like their ideal setup, but fortunately it doesn't always work that way, but that's kind of what you can expect when you're playing against the Scots. All right, I think it's pretty clear what they're trying to achieve. What kind of units would you take to get you to that dream scenario, Tim?
I mean, I feel like there's the Scots. As long as you have like a big unit that can do the combo, I feel like you're good. Like, it's really up to preference. I feel like the Hearthguard force you to have more defense dice ready at all times and make you play a little bit more defensive, because of course defense dice are more valuable on Hearthguard, because you usually get less hits, and so every additional defense die you have is worth more. And if you go the warrior route, it doesn't hurt as much to lose a warrior as it hurts to lose a Hearthguard model. And so I feel like if you want to be more aggressive, you lean into one or two 12 stacks of warriors and like one or two small dice batteries, a 12 man unit of levies, and just go that way. Maybe a 1 point of warrior Hearthguard to keep your warlord safe. Like, that would be, in my mind, that's like two 12 stacks of warriors, so that's 3 points. There's a stack of Hearthguard, just a four stack. There's a stack that's 4 points, then 1 point of levies, that's 5 points, and then the remaining eight warriors you have are probably like four and four to get you to a good amount of dice. But that's just one way. You can definitely build them with like an eight man unit of Hearthguard, and yeah.
I think it's pretty valid what you said. Personally, I kind of double up my Scots with Picts, and then I have a 2 points on Hearthguard, because I like Hearthguard and I don't need to paint so much. 1 point of levy with bows, and then 3 points of warriors. I also have the mounted options for the Hearthguard and Warlord, but I don't think I've ever felt the need to use them. I just think most of the board doesn't really support the mounted option, but I'm sure some people have found some use for it, maybe some edge cases. Then it's interesting. Probably the warband that you're describing, you might be able to take the Warlord and the Hearthguard, like the 1 point of Hearthguard mounted for like a little bit of mobility.
But, just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're losing out on so much, so much synergy with the board. I'm not sure it would make a ton of sense, to be honest.
I mean, if you don't have them, and of course they don't work on the board, but if you don't have them, your opponent, like, it really depends on the matchup. I feel like it can be really important to have some kind of range, a little bit of a higher range threat. And I really don't like them on horses with this board, obviously.
Because like basically you lose long spears, which is your the thing that you need to make everything work. It only works with infantry, so obviously if you're mounted that doesn't work. Maybe for the long range threat there might be a mercenary or something else that you can take. If not, diversionary volley with the levy bows is kind of the best long range threat you can get.
But that's the whole struggle of the board, right? To kind of deal with the things that are very far away from you and don't really want to touch you. And so I'm not sure we can solve that for the battle board, but.
I think it's also like a nice little balancing thing as well, because you're incredibly strong in melee. So you don't want to be like a beast in melee and then also just be able to like delete units from far away. So I think it's a nice little mechanism that they've managed to have like some weakness. It does make it frustrating if you're a Scots player and you're just, everyone's running away from you and you're just like getting javelin to death or composite bow to death, but just tough it up, because like people have to deal with like playing a Scots player. So
that's a surprise. So I feel like that sums up the whole build. So how which models exactly do you take? Like, I can just quickly say I just use the good old Dark Age Warriors with some bits from the Viking sets and like the Anglo-Saxon sets, just not the helmets or the as long as they look armored, they feel quite right to me.
Yeah, I use the metal futsal models. So they've got a nice line of basically everything for the Scots and then also the Picts. And then I went for like all the little round shields so they can work better for both. And then I also used the Scottish cavalry for my mounted Welsh as well. So I kind of like, they do double duty for the warlord and for the Hearthguard if I really want to, but I don't think I've ever used it for that purpose. But Futsor Scots, really nice models, super quick to paint up because they're, I think for me, the Futsor is like the optimal between detail and not too much detail that it takes forever to paint. So nice little models. And I think I even have like a few gripping beast ones in there as well. And I have like the Macbeth one, which is gigantic, which is like 32 millimeters, not 28 millimeters in scale. And then I think I actually think I have the Levy bows as a gripping beast. But there, the scale is just not comparable to Futsor. But they are, I think they're even pretty big for compared to the gripping, the Dark Age Wars, the plastic Dark Age Wars. So it's not perfect compatibility, but it's okay. They work.
All right. So now that we know how to build them and with what models, what would you rate them, JP?
I would rate them like 4 haggis out of 5. Like in terms of, like I think any tournament, like for me, the playstyle isn't the most interesting in terms of what I want to do, but like in terms of just a solid warband where you know you're going to do perfectly fine and the board itself is not going to be like a handicap, something you have to work around. I think taking Scots to a tournament is very valid, and it just means like, yeah, you're gonna do fine.
Yeah, I feel like
if you don't do well, it's your own fault, basically.
Yeah. Thanks. I'll take that personally because I didn't do well with the Scots. I think I got like second to last on the tournament we met like 2.5 years ago. Anyway, I feel like these guys, many people might disagree with me here, but I'll give them a 3 out of 5 because I feel like they're the perfect one-trick pony. Like, if you touch them in melee, you are done. It's just, like, why did you do that? And as you said, it creates a playstyle that's quite challenging. Like, it's basically all around how, as a Scott player, it's basically all around how can I catch them and make sure that I wipe whatever I touch. And this whole thing is... It's not super interesting to me personally. So yeah, I'll give them a 3 out of 5 because they usually don't end up in the top 5 or whatever of tournaments, because they don't have these huge plays that are like unexpected and take a game back to them. Because they project really well what they will do. They will fight you and they will win. And if you fight them, you will lose. And so I feel like they might be a really good warband to introduce a new player that has played other maybe harder games or just advanced, just other, I don't know, like other games, like box games or other war games, tabletop games. Because if you have the basics down, these guys show you the combo potential of Saga. And this is just a very clear projection of what the combo can be, and other battle boards are a little bit more hidden with that. But I feel like these guys can be good to, introduce a player that already plays something else complicated into Saga and show them, hey, this is the world of melee in Saga.
All right, clear. Okay, I think have we covered everything? I think there's not a ton of other options in terms of models or anything else that we can that are specific to the Scots. But it's fine. Just buy more models. I think that pretty much covers it for the Scots. I think we're for reals now, we're down to the last one.
Yeah, just one more. I have.
And it's gonna be like then we have a big decision to make. Which direction we're gonna go?
We'll see. We'll see. I have one more. Just quick thing. I got a very in the beginning of the year. I got a very sweet message from a guy called Kuba from Poland, and I played him in one of the Polish Grand Melee games, and he was like, dude, I heard you starting to play Magic the Gathering. That's just the wrong thing to do. Just start a different game. And he basically ended up giving me a tutorial to, or sending me a bunch of tutorial links and interesting information about a game called Netrunner that's in his words, better than Magic the Gathering. And I thought that was hella nice to just that felt like so heartfelt by him to like be to kind of save me from Magic the Gathering and pull me into a game that he loves. And I really appreciated your messages, Kuba. And so just quickly, that's very nice. And he also said that he really enjoys listening to our podcast, JP. So those messages, just for me personally, they make everything, like, they make it worthwhile, right? And so that's also the reason why I'm curious to see, JP, which direction we go after the Viking book is done.
I think it's fair to say that we're going to go the Warhammer Old World direction, right?
Exactly. That's what we talked about, and we all agreed. Like, we talked to all our sponsors and shareholders, and they all
willing to drop like a billion euros on an army. So it's all good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we work for, right? So to get miniatures. All right. Cool. That's it. Thank you guys for listening. And
all right. Take care, everyone. Nice talking to you, Tim. It's been a while. I know that our people who listen don't know that, but I think we've gone some like almost 2 months without recording.
Yeah,
it feels hot.
It happens. It happens.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Speak to you soon. Take care. Bye.
Bye.